Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Analytive Podcast. Today on the Analytive Podcast, I have Steve Larson. Steve is somebody I've wanted to interview for a while. I've watched his career from afar for a bit. He has, quite the skill set from running his own podcast. He's worked with Russell Brunson and the crew over at ClickFunnels. He was their interim CMO for a little bit. He knows funnels better than almost anybody I've ever talked to. And so in this interview, we get into funnels. Are funnels still relevant in 2024? A little bit of background on what Steve is working on, as well as his new book. So without further ado, here is my interview with Steve Larson on the Analytive Podcast. Thanks for coming on the Analytive Podcast. Great to talk to you.
Hey, great to be here. Thank you so much. Sorry, I'm taking a drink right at a bad moment.
No, you're good. I mentioned before that, you know, I'd kind of followed your career building funnels and all that for a while. So first question out of the gate, most of our audience probably knows what funnels are. Are they still relevant in 2024? Like, what's your take, right? Because I know funnels were real big. Russell and you and a bunch of people made them big, you know, 5 years ago, maybe 3 years ago. What do you think of them in 2024?
Yeah, you know, I've actually been building funnels for almost 10 years now, which is psycho to me to be thinking about that. I've been doing it a long time now. And it's interesting. I always like to tell people that, like, ClickFunnels never invented funnels. A funnel is involved in every purchase, even an accidental one, you know. So whether or not someone was intentional with their funnel is really what matters. If you made a sale ever, you had a funnel. But most people just don't make them with any kind of intention. So that's why their sales feels accidental, or they think that a funnel is just some pages. They don't really understand that it's everything you're doing in marketing.
Sure.
Talk about that,
if you would, for just a second. You said if you've ever made a sale, you've used a funnel. So, you know, if somebody's, whatever, they got a store, they got, you know, maybe e-commerce online or just a walk-in store. How do you think about that, right, in a non-funnel context?
Yeah. Well, most of the time people think of a funnel as being kind of what got really popularized a little while ago. And I think that that was really just because funnels were being positioned as kind of a biz op. You know, it's like, and so all these people who never really had a business before suddenly had this ability to go help companies make money. And so funnels were a biz op. And when people are looking for an opportunity to make money, they're exploding, and it got really, really popular. But even if you're in e-commerce or whatever, like, you're still, you know, I mean, when I was a door-to-door sales guy, I was the funnel. I define a funnel as an offer and a message. That's it. Gotcha. And so when I go door-to-door, or when I was, you know, 15 years ago, like, I was the funnel. I had an offer and a message. And the fact they put them on the internet, I think that's one of the reasons people had a hard time with funnels, or some of them did, is because they just didn't have a good offer and message. And they thought that it was just a series of pages, you know?
Right. Yeah. Totally. Sorry, I interrupted you then. So go ahead. So funnel, you said offer, message. What about, upsells and downsells? I know that was a kind of a big part of funnels as well. Like, do you see that offline a lot, or like, are you seeing that still relevant?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not at my house today. I'm working some, you know, in my studio here, and I ordered Uber Eats, you know, and there's little upsells that they got you with, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the upsells and downsells are just, those have been around way before the internet, even, you know, little add-ons and such. The whole point of them, though, is just to increase average car value. But I think that's shifted. And I think that since 2020, there has been a higher need for companies to focus on lifetime value instead of average car value. You know, it's more like that's been the big shift. Some of the hypiness of the internet opportunity kind of died off a little, and which is fine, but now the real businesses stick around and LTV matters more now.
Yeah, totally. You're also working on a book, changing gears a little bit, with Russell. So do you want to talk about that and what you're doing with that?
Yeah. You know, this started in like a really weird way, honestly. It was never like an intention to do this, but it's been really fun. I got to help him with his trilogy series. Right. Mm-hmm. And so he and I would ping pong back and forth. And I remember one day, I mean,
you're talking about the
years.
Secrets, like .com secrets, expert
yeah.
secrets. What's the last one? I have it on my shelf right now.
Traffic.com and expert. Yeah. Yeah. So when I was this funnel guy, and I left that 7 years ago now, which is crazy. We've remained friends, and he spoke at one of my events, and he was like, have you ever looked at this guy named Claude Hopkins, or, you know, these old 1800s, 1900s marketers? And it opened this rabbit hole for me that went on for like 3 years. I remember one day I was dropping something off at his house, This is like late 2019, early 2020. And I was like, dude, I'm studying Barnum and finding some crazy patterns. Apparently, there's like actually a pattern on how Barnum would do his campaigns. And this is all offline, of course, no internet yet, you know? And so I started sharing it with him, and he's like, that's awesome. And it's so funny the way Russell, like when you drop something like that on him, it's like 3-6 months later, something like that. He messaged me and he goes, dude, I was thinking about that thing you said. I was like, that was like 6 months ago. He goes, do you want to co-author a book together on that? I was like, heck yeah. You know? And so it's all this research that I've found, and we've been able to, basically the conclusion that I have found after going through all this stuff is that there's no such thing as internet marketing. There is marketing, and we use the internet to distribute it. That's it. And sometimes it's easier to learn what marketing is without the internet, because we get too focused in on like, what time should I post on Facebook? You know, not saying that stuff doesn't make a little bit of a difference, but it's not marketing at its essence. And that's what's been really fun. So this book is called Dramatic Demonstrations, and it's all about that work.
That's awesome. I was just reading the 48 Laws of Power, and there's a chapter in there about P.T. Barnum and all the eclectic things he did about, you know, bricklayers walking around drawing people to his museum. Like, I'm sure you've uncovered a few of those. So I'm excited to dive in. I was really intrigued by it. So that's a crazy timing.
Yeah. It'd be really fun. It's so we're going to do a workshop. Every book that, you know, that we worked on together, it's all his work, of course. The Secrets trilogy, we always did it at an event first. And so we're going to do a workshop together one time, test the book, and then go write it. So that's fun.
So basically you take all the content, put it in a, like an event, like a workshop, and then based on that is how you create the book. Is that what?
Yeah. There's a number of steps. I always teach it multiple times, you know, before I ever feel like I can go write something. And then, usually I'll do like a challenge. I'll do multiple webinars. I'll take on several clients. The event is kind of like one of the final moves. It's like, here's all my research. Here's what I found. And then based on if people get it, you know, and understand it, we make changes.
Gotcha. So you start with the research, then you do like individual consulting engagements or, you know, application, then you do the event. And then if everything that makes it through is the good stuff, right? And then that makes it in the book.
Yeah, it's kind of how you're working to disprove the theory. It's like, because there's, you know, the diversion, and you're going through all these different ideation phases, and then there's the conversion phase. And I think that's why some people, you know, have like weird frameworks they put out, is they only do half of it. So like, I came up with a cool idea. Like, now you got to do the other half of the coin though, and make fun of your idea. Why did the idea suck? You know, whittle it down, because it's probably garbage or a cool thought, but not actually true in application. So I'm really proud of this, because done both sides, probably a little too much. Just wanted to be too perfect. So
I know, I get that. So is the book only on Barnum, or is it just about dramatic demonstrations in general?
It uses P.T. Barnum kind of as the cornerstone story, but there's a lot of others that are going to be in there too. And then we also are pulling stories from how I've been doing this stuff in modern day to living people.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So it's not theory.
Awesome. So what else are you working on then? So book with Russell, and then like you've been, as of, you know, March when we're recording this, you've been fairly quiet on like YouTube and some of the socials. So I think you probably got a lot going on. What else are you working on?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of reasons for that quietness. I kind of had to figure out, I was at a spot where you know, I've been on films for 10 years now. I was like, you know what? I'm the age right now that Russell was when he thought of ClickFunnels. And so part of it is I got a little too comparative, and I was like, what's my ClickFunnels? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And but it's been a really fun journey. And every time I see someone post, like, I'm trying to figure out what I do, I'm like, ooh, that person's about to go through a personal experience, some personal discovery. I've started a consulting practice, which has been so fun, around a theory, which has gone through the same.
Hang on, Steven. I think I lost you.
Yeah.
Oh, you're back. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Back.
Yeah. So cool. Started based on a theory, and that's what we got.
Anyway, so it's called the market disruption flywheel, and it's how innovators build basically daily lead flow around their innovations. Basically what I've realized and I've seen around others is that a lot of people don't like being marketers. They like being entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. Totally different mindsets, completely different roles in a business. We're the only space on the online that really tries to have the same person be all those roles. Yeah. And so I've been going to the entrepreneurs and saying, let me install marketing in your thing. Stay an entrepreneur. Don't learn this stuff. Yeah.
Well, what is that? Talk about that. Marketing versus entrepreneur, right? Like,
yeah.
Because you look at somebody like an Elon, obviously, he is both a marketer and an entrepreneur. Somebody like a Russell Brunson, obviously both. Yeah. For you, I guess, how do you separate those in a lot of the people that you see? Like different skill sets? What does that look like?
Yeah, oh, great question. Because like, it's not to say that it doesn't exist. It's just rare for the same person to be both roles. So I define entrepreneur. To be an entrepreneur means that you find and solve a valuable problem. That's it. My own definition, you find and solve a valuable problem. But there's a lot of entrepreneurs that are broke, but they are entrepreneurs. And it's because they don't do the second role, marketing. A marketer is somebody who is an attention getter measured in lead gen. You don't measure marketing in likes, subscribes, comments, shares, channel size, any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Only in leads. And so with those two together, I mean, that's what I've been bringing back into those businesses. So it's been fun because I've been finding all these innovators who are like, they really are these creative geniuses, but they just don't know what to do next. And then they burnt out and they start getting resentment of their own business.
You know? Yeah. So yeah. What strategies are you using? I mean, we kind of opened talking about funnels, like, you know, and we talked about how internet marketing is just marketing on the internet. But so right now, again, March 2024, what are you using? Like, what are you seeing working? How do you approach these entrepreneurs and what strategies are you putting together?
Yeah, no, it's great because a lot has changed, you know, especially since 2020. I think we've all felt a shift on the internet. And so I actually had to come up with it's been 4 years since I've been working on this, but I feel like I finally nailed it. My clients are getting a lot of success with it. I call it the market disruption flywheel. And what it does is it laughs in the face at Red Ocean, Blue Ocean.
Okay.
I hate Red Ocean, Blue Ocean.
Yeah. I remember in school. Yeah. I'll learn all about that. All the books. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, there's gotta be a better way than building a brand new market just because you build a product. That's insane. That's like saying I'm going to go build a mall just because I innovated something.
Yeah.
It's like, I made a product, therefore I need a mall just to have a kiosk. It's like, no.
Right.
So what it does is it focuses on staying in the red ocean. And instead of it being red ocean, blue ocean, it's red ocean, blue offer. You stay in the red and learn to disrupt the red because there's already people there. It's actually a lot mm-hmm. easier lead gen to do during recessions too. So that's what it's focused on.
Yeah. Can you, again, I'm sure you have clients proprietary. Can you talk more about that? Like what would be an example of a blue offer in a red ocean?
Yeah. This lady doesn't want me to talk about it quite yet. Let me find one real quick. All right, here we go. I got a client that helps women who are getting diagnosed with osteoporosis.
Mm, okay.
And super red, been around forever, right? Osteoporosis, like the thing, right? Older than the internet, right? And so what we did is we came up with a series of new hooks, which I've had to redefine what a hook is too. This series of new hooks, anyway, I'll read it. Here you go. So I was just sharing this with somebody else if I have it up right now. So what we're doing is we're helping them talk to women who have, he focuses on helping women who have osteoporosis. However, they've been taking all the medications for 2 years and their bones are actually getting weaker, which is what I guess what happens to most of them. It's like a side effect of the medication. So then it's like, well, why do you, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
Wait a second. What? So then this is what we wrote. I said, things aren't improving based on your latest bone density scan. Now the doctor wants to meet again to share a few options. But why? You had this exact same conversation not long ago and are already on the path, meds required, force prescribed to you. But what choice did you have? So for months, you've gone along with the doctor's orders. There's a point to this. I'll wrap in a circle here. You've been going on doctor's orders, taking hard to pronounce medications, going on more walks, increasing calcium intake. But to make matters more awkward, friends and family have been sightsee driving your health, constantly checking in about the doctor's orders. Yet over the years, you're the one they've been looking up to as an example of their own general health. Back again with the doctor, you're told that things would have been worse if you hadn't been following their prescription, but give no other advice than other just to keep doing what you're doing. As you get back in the car, you notice the biggest fear you have is painfully letting your bones get so weak you end up in permanent assisted living, unable to move or really live again. Will slowly deteriorating represent the rest of your life, what you're remembered for? That's kind of the end of it. What simple but hidden unorthodox path could you take in the next 12 months to keep all those medications from slowly poisoning your bones to death and restore the longevity you once had and were known for? And then we got bonepoison.com.
Okay.
And so the point of this, one of the things we've had to go do in Red Oceans now, and I think it's because of all the AI, is that what's happening right now is there's so much bland marketing that can get created at such high volume.
Yes.
That all these companies that were previously making it, but never really figured out messaging, they offered something valuable. They're kind of drowning.
Yeah.
And so the answer has been to refresh positioning back to the Red Ocean combined with new hook material that has nothing to do with what someone's selling. The story is only about what the customer is experiencing. And so all these entrepreneurs go get in the seat of writing marketing, and then they're just like, entrepreneurs are bad marketers.
Right.
Right? So what?
This is product focused. It's so much of it is like, here's my product. It's so cool.
Yeah. And yeah. They love what they made. And so they're so close to the bottle and they're like, how come I even need a sales message? Can't people just tell that this thing is amazing? You know?
Yeah.
Like, so it's been a refresh of positioning and hook messaging. So that's been a Red Ocean one we're working on right now.
I've seen that too. I think it's AI driven. I think a lot of it too is like, you know, potentially as the market softens up, you know, like higher ticket items or unique things, or ununique things have slowed down for us. Like we've seen that across several different clients, right? Like, you know, suddenly, you know, people are not spending maybe the amount of money, right? The lower lifetime value, or at least in this season, lower ticket value, right? Like, I'm not going to buy the $200 version. I'm going to buy the $80 version, you know, and downsize. We see that a lot. And the AI approach is interesting because AI is what, just a conglomeration of stuff it found online already.
On the internet. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, we talk a lot with our lead magnet folks about like, you got to write like ungoogleable information. It's like, okay, if you're putting together a lead magnet or an offer, like it can't be the same thing that like ChatGPT will spit out in 35 seconds. Like it just,
right.
It can't be. Like if you're really the expert in this, that shouldn't be that hard, right? To come up with five things that are not on every blog if I Google search it kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. But are always on the first page of all the Google rankings.
Yep. So flywheel market,
each other.
market disruption flywheel. What's the flywheel part of it?
The flywheel is six different steps that it's just like a normal flywheel. As you crank it, it speeds up, you know, like a flywheel in a car. And what it's done is it's been able to systemize more people's marketing and leverage the past winners. So, you know, like in a car, the flywheel is what's turning the engine when there's no explosion happening. Right.
Right. Right.
But what gets the initial kickoff of that flywheel, you know, is that starter engine. And we've come to look at the act of launching like a starter motor that turns a whole machine rather than, because all these companies are like, I don't want to get stuck in a launch business, and they shouldn't. But when you change what you're launching, you're not just launching a product, you're launching a machine. It's really cool because it frees the innovator really quickly.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, that's awesome. Cool. Looking at my notes here. Other projects. Are you still doing conferences pretty regularly?
Yeah, actually. Yeah, right here in the studio, and got two more coming up this quarter. Super psyched about them.
Okay. Fun. What kind of clients do you take to those? Like, if our audience is listening, like, who is a good fit for a Steve Larson conference?
Yeah, it's really somebody who has kicked their business. You know, for about 6 years, I worked with someone who was brand new. And in the last 2 years, I've really kind of shifted towards really helping those who they're at least past the 300 to 500 grand mark. And usually they have, you know, one or two people on their team besides them. They're in that phase where they're making money, but they may not be personally making a lot.
Sure.
They're on the verge, you know, they're on the verge of a little bit of burnt out personally. And they're like, I started this for my dream, but I hate my dream. My dream is handcuffing me. So it's mostly been that group.
Yeah. So like those, not even middle market, but like slightly mature entrepreneurs, like, you know, is it, cause do you help with mostly marketing or scaling or kind of all the above? Like what's your niche focus?
It's scaling from the context of marketing. Yeah. It's, I went back to ClickFunnels as a fractional CMO for a little while, and then it really opened my eyes to things I was doing that I didn't know were a little bit unique. And then I systemized that. And okay. I was like, let's take that. So it's really fractional CMO style stuff into businesses that are proven, but still kind of drowning a little.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense. The capitalist pig moniker. So you've had that now for a long time. I remember
yeah.
what's the background on that? How did that start?
Yeah, it started from, I was actually back when I was in the army. I was becoming an officer, and, we were this whole semester, we just had to study different wars, and this historian at the end of this hardcore semester, studying the different battles, reading journals of Abraham Lincoln and George, you know, really fascinating, you know, really cool. And at the end, this dude leans back in his chair and he's like, "Oh man, you guys did a great job." And he goes, it's just class of all these future officers. And he goes, "You know, I've always noticed that there's never been a war that started over social issues. Wars have always started over rights, specifically states' rights." And I was like, I remember leaning forward and I was like, "Say that again," because that was good. That little tic-tac of a phrase bubbled back up into my head when I started working for Russell years later. And I was building funnels for huge names. And we were working on, I don't remember exactly which one. Anyway, I started realizing though that there were certain companies that would take off whose marketing kind of sucked, but they had a really strong social issue that they were stood for. Not a right. There was this clear line in the sand. Whenever somebody started building a brand or a business around a right, it was usually like flash in the pan and they would burn with it. You know what I mean? It was too hot of a topic, you know? But when it was a social issue and they could build a brand around a social issue, I was like, that's really fascinating. Those brands always took off. So I was like, what's a social issue that people have been fighting over forever that I could take a stand on? And one day, Russell and I would buy each other stupid shirts. And one day I saw the shirt on the internet that said Capitalist Pig. It was not this one. It's very different than this one, but it gave me the idea for this one. And I got it and I gave one to Russell and I wore it when I was working for him, and the camera panned past me on a live and the comments exploded. And I was like, social issue. That's really where it came from. And I was like, all right, let's do that. So then I remade it. Yeah.
So when you say right, social issue, how do you, what would be an example? Obviously, Capitalist Pig, what's an example of right that may not play well? Like, how do you differentiate those?
Yeah, like social issue, meaning, or a social argument, you know? What's like a hot topic that's going on right now? And you could choose something that's been like current events, but I wanted to choose something that's been around forever. Capitalism. Like
evergreen, socialism. Yeah.
Yeah, a long-standing argument. That I could tie my brand to. A right or something that people don't know or are trying to figure out if it's a right would be, I'm just going to say it, like the jab.
Oh, yeah.
Too hot.
Yeah.
Too hot. Wrong kind of hot. Right. But I still try to find those things that have been around for a long time.
And people butt heads over, get some friction and some discussion going.
Yeah. I started getting all these messages as soon as I did it of people being like, "You're saying what I never knew. I didn't know how to say what you're saying. Thank you." And you kind of enlist an army very quickly. You also enlist an enemy. So you do get kind of slammed a little bit, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Has the response been, I guess, overwhelmingly positive? Like, how do you, because obviously you're in a circle that probably glorifies to a certain extent, right? Like making money. So has it been, have you received much heat from it, or is it just pretty like chill?
If you're ever having too good of a day, just go read my YouTube comments. It'll take care of it in a second.
Oh, yeah. Well, YouTube's YouTube, right?
No, I get 50, it's 50-50 response. Yeah. Half the people love it. Half the people hate it.
It's fun. So when's the book come out? So circling back to that topic.
Yeah.
You have a release date yet?
Well, we're doing our workshop in May. And then
in Boise? Is it in Boise?
Yeah. Just right from the stage. We're doing that on my event studio here. I'm trying to have it out by September for Funnel Hacking Live. So I'll be writing for 3 months.
Great. Well, I'll pick up a copy when it gets released. So yeah, I want to be super, respectful of your time, I could ask you a lot more questions about funnels and various things, because you're a deep well of knowledge. And like I said, I've kind of followed your journey and even caught up from time to time on the podcast, learned a lot there. I heard the one, gosh, it was like 6 months ago now, where they talked about taking cash out of your business. I don't even remember who the guest was.
Oh, yeah.
And that was very helpful to me, right? Like the importance of taking cash out of your business, because solving problems with creativity versus money was a good, yeah, a good take. I remember that. So yeah, check out the podcast if you haven't, audience. Yeah. So Stephen, where can people find you? Keep in touch. What's the best way to connect with you?
Honestly, right now, I know my social media has been a little quiet lately, so I haven't really looked at it much. I would say, can I give a link? I don't want to.
Yeah. Give a link. I can throw it in the show notes. Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, dailyleadflow.com. It's a free resource. It's a calculator that will help you see. It's totally free. It'll help you see how many leads you are away from kind of walking from the business, if that's your goal, or just having more time.
Okay, cool. Dailyleadflow.com. Yeah, the calculator there.
Yeah, good stuff.
I'll throw a link in. Anything I didn't ask that I should have asked?
I mean, appreciate it. This is awesome. Thanks for having me on.